So let us begin. Chelek Yud Beis, Parashas Kedoshim, page 91. It's not a particularly long sicha, and it's got a very relevant and powerful lesson for us. So there's lots that we could learn. The sicha is going to start off with just the opening line of Kedoshim and a lesson that we're supposed to derive from the opening line of Kedoshim. But what's especially relevant and useful and nice for us is that this week is a double parasha. And in the course of explaining the message of the sicha, the personal, the take-home message, the spiritual message of the sicha, so what the Rebbe is going to do is link this parasha and the previous parasha, Achrei Mois, which is nice because we're going into a double parasha. Not only do we get a take-home lesson, but we're going to get to learn something that is relevant specifically in the specific setup of this week. Because the sicha is on Parashas Kedoshim, that's a little bit unusual. Usually, you would expect that the sicha speaks to the individual parasha that it's named for. Okay, so just a little bit of a heads up that we're going to be talking about two parashas in one. So it starts as follows. If you do have it in front of you, it's on page 91. B'toichen atzivoy. When you get to the content, to the message, the idea of the specific instruction that Hashem gives us, which is Kedoshim Tiyu. Okay, what's Kedoshim Tiyu? You should be holy. That's how the parasha starts off. That Hashem speaks to Moshe, tell the Jewish people, Kedoshim Tiyu, that you should be holy. So Matzinu Beis Pirushim Harachoykim Zemi Zemin Akotze Lakotze. When it comes to interpreting, what does it mean practically? Be holy. What does that mean? It sounds so abstract. It sounds so intangible. Be holy. What exactly are you supposed to do? So in explaining what Kedoshim to you means, there are two specific interpretations that we're going to look at. And the Rebbe immediately identifies that these two explanations are on polar opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of explaining what it means. Number one, Bepashtus. The first explanation that we'll look at is an explanation that is simple. Kedoshim means that you should be Kadosh. What's Kadosh? So what that means is Kadosh Mufresh Umuvdal. I know that everybody always translates the word Kadosh as holy, but a better translation for the word Kadosh would mean distinct or separate. And that's why you'll find that there's certain places in Halacha where we use the term Kadosh and we're not talking specifically about being holy. We're actually talking about being distinct or separate and sometimes even unholy. Something that has been separated from the ordinary, or a person who has chosen a particular lifestyle that is separated or distinct from the ordinary. So the simplest explanation is Kedoshim to you. What's Hashem saying? Be holy. Be distinct, be unusual, be removed from ordinary behavior. But then the Rebbe explains, V'loi rak muvdal minyonei oilam hazeh. When it says that you should be distinct, it does not only mean that a person is instructed and expected by Judaism, by Torah, that you should be separate from the conduct of the physical material world. Ki'im kdoshim ti b'kdusha nalis kozoi she'esh lo dimen v'kesh l'kdusha Hashem. Now, this is a big deal. Not only is the Torah telling us, stay away from behavior that is ordinary, that is materialistic, that is worldly, and rather focus yourself on behavior that is connected to Kedusha, to holiness. But it's actually saying more than that. That even in the context of being holy, even in the context of distinct behavior, the kind of distinct behavior, the kind of unusual behavior that is expected of us is that we should be at such a level of holiness that we're connected and even similar to Hashem. Shelachen kadosh ani hu atam v'hasbor l'kadoshim tiyu. So if you read the pasuk goes like this. Kadoshim tiyu, you should be holy, ki kadosh ani, because I, Hashem, because I am holy. That's very profound. That's telling us that the kind of holiness that we're expected to achieve, the kind of distinction that we're expected to achieve by virtue of this instruction, is not just to be Jewish, not just to be frum, not just to observe, but to be ki kadosh ani, something that is similar to Hashem, because that's the motivation that's given. Why should you do this? Because that's how Hashem is. Now, this is a tall order. And what does it mean practically? What it means is Aliyah be'iloy achar iloy ad l'tachlis ha'kdusha shalamayla mikol inyone abriya v'chol tosei de'ishtal shalos. That actually means that the expectation of Kedoshim to you is that we should constantly, it's not a once-off instruction, but we should constantly work to become holier and holier, more and more elevated, until we reach a point that we are so elevated that we are in totally beyond the expectations or beyond the parameters of creation. And he even uses the expression beyond hishtalshelus, that we should be so holy that we transcend the spiritual hierarchy as well. Now, before we go any further, this instruction of Kedoshim 2 probably speaks to what many people think but don't say about Judaism. Judaism is impossible. What are you telling me, Avia, that I should be at such a level that I'm ki kodosh, that I'm similar in holiness to Hashem's holiness? Well, me, that's what you expect of me. You expect of me that I should transcend the whole structure of ishtalshelus, of the spiritual realms. I mean, it sounds fanciful. That's explanation number one, a very high expectation. Now let's look at explanation number two. Beis, aderech pirusha gemara b'kasav adomin dan, that the explanation based on what the Gemara comments on a slightly different pasuk, but it's the same theme. The pasuk there says, "V'hiskadishtem elumayim rishonim, v'yusim kedoshim elumayim achronim." The pasuk says that you should sanctify yourself and you should be holy. Okay, so what does it mean, sanctify yourself and be holy? So the Gemara says, sanctify yourself means that you have to wash your hands before you eat bread. And you should be holy means you do my machronim before you bench. Okay, that sounds a lot more accessible. Kedoshim aliyah after aliyah and elevating and getting beyond hishtalshelus is like, whoa, I don't know what you're talking about. But you tell me to wash my hands. Okay, I can relate to that. Sounds very entry level. So, hainu shakdusha hibidvarim pshutim ugashmiim benegel achilushtia. That interpretation says that how do you become kedoshim to you? How do you fulfill this mitzvah? Through very pragmatic, earthy things, like how you behave around food and drink. And even in the context of just doing simple things like washing your hands, that could fulfill the expectation of ki kadosh ani, because I, Hashem, am holy. Okay, so now we've got two completely different ways of looking at this, right? The one is, we expect of you, Kedoshim to you, that you should aspire towards something that is so beyond, that is so holy, that is so godlike, that we don't actually even know what it means to transcend hishtalshelus. I mean, you can use the words, but we have no idea what it means in practice. One interpretation. And the other interpretation is brass tacks, simple things, wash your hands. Which leads us immediately to think, which one is true, first of all? And second of all, how can the same instruction send us off in two completely opposite directions? In a certain regard, you could say that this is a miniature version of the whole of Judaism. Does Judaism expect me to aim for the stars? Or does Judaism expect me just to go through practical things to the best of my ability? What does Hashem really expect of us? So the Rebbe continues, in order to understand this incredible paradox and of course what the message is for us. So in order to understand it, let's look at this. The parasha that precedes Kedoshim, which is Parashas Acharei Mois, and this parasha Kedoshim, they share a common theme. Which is the reason why so many years we read the two parashas together. It's not arbitrary. We don't say, okay, listen, we don't have enough weeks in the year and we have too many parashas, so we've got to just, you know, willy-nilly put them together. Those parashas that are coupled are connected by theme. That's why they could be read on the same Shabbos. So here we've got these two parashas, Achrei and Kedoshim. The fact that they can sometimes be read together is an indication of the fact that they share a common theme. What's their theme? k'may b'cholin shatayra hayram yichelus kol echad ve'echad b'avodasoi. And of course, whatever it is that we're going to learn about these two parashas and what links them together must talk directly to us and must give us a lesson, because Torah is not here for theory. Torah is not just to inspire. Torah is to teach. The word Torah means to teach. So the objective over here is that we need to come out of this with a practical lesson that you and I can apply in our lives, starting literally today. Particularly when you consider what the Alter Rebbe taught us, that we're expected to live with the times, which means to live with the parasha. Live with the parasha means that the message of the parasha has to come to life in my life. It has to be real to me. So we're not just looking to explain this apparent paradox between a very high interpretation of Kedoshim and a very accessible interpretation of Kedoshim. And we're not just looking to link the two parashas of Achrei and Kedoshim. We're looking for a take-home message. So in order to do that, let's find what's the common denominator between the two parashas. Achrei Mois seems to speak about a totally different topic. Achrei Mois speaks about Yom Kippur. Achrei Mois speaks about promiscuous relationships. Kedoshim is a whole long list of mitzvahs. What's the common denominator between the two? Well, actually, the common denominator is fairly straightforward and easy to work out. And the very fact that the common denominator theme between the two parashas is fairly easy to understand means that the take-home lesson should be fairly easy to identify. Okay, so the two are going to go together. Let's start like this. Parashas Achrei, Aschalos Minyan Shutachlis HaKadosh B'Mokim U'Bizman U'Bivnei Adam. So Parashas Achrei Mois starts off by speaking about something that is the highest level of holiness in time, space, and in the human experience. V'Signon HaYodua Bo'Elam Shana V'Nefesh. In the language that we often use, we say you could take the whole of existence and you could divide it, or you could identify how it manifests in three primary areas. Everything exists in Olam, which means space. Shana, which is time. And Nefesh, which is in the human experience. And consistently throughout Judaism, we always look to identify what this means in time, space, and the human experience. Now, we know that Yom Kippur is a time of the absolute, the utmost holiness in those three realms. Avodah B'Kodesh HaKadoshim, the place. Where does Yom Kippur, in the description of Parshas Achrei Mois, where does Yom Kippur happen? In what place? The holiest place on earth. Not just the Beis HaMikdash, but specifically the Kodesh HaKadoshim. What time does it happen? B'Yom HaKadosh, on the holiest day of the year, which is Yom Kippur. And in human experience, who is the human being who's the main actor in that particular event? Alidei Kohen Gadol, the holiest Jew. So holiest place, holiest time, holiest person. What does that tell you? That Achrei Mois, the parasha of Achrei Mois, starts off with the theme of the highest level of holiness. And we've already said that that's the theme of Kedoshim. We just said it in the introduction. V'inyan HaKedusha hu gam ha'ikar b'teichna shel parashas Kedoshim, haschalosa Kedoshim tiyu ki kodesh ani. We see the exact same kind of theme emerge at the beginning of Parashas Kedoshim. What's Kedoshim all about? Kedoshim tiyu, that you should be holy. Ah, so Achrei Mois spoke about being holy on the holiest day of the year, in the holiest place, when the holiest person is working. Kedoshim has the same theme. Kedoshim tiyu, you should be holy. In fact, in Kedoshim, it doesn't just say it once. Towards the end of the parasha, the theme is reiterated, where Hashem says you should be holy because I am holy. And it's also repeated in the middle of the parasha. So it's very much a dominant theme of Kedoshim, is that you should be holy. And not just any holy, ki kadosh ani, the kind of holy that derives from me. In other words, a holiness at the level that Hashem would anticipate and expect. In fact, the theme of holiness is such an overwhelming theme in the parasha, that the parasha's name, remember, of course, that the name of a parasha is supposed to encapsulate what the real meaning of that parasha is. So the name of this parasha is Kedoshim. So where's the common denominator? The expectation of holiness. The attainment of the greatest level of holiness. In Achrei Mois, it's one day a year. And in Kedoshim, it's a theme for life. Now that we have established that the kind of holiness that we're looking towards is ultimate holiness, Kedusha at the highest level, Kedusha that is like Yom Kippur, Kedusha that is like the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that is like a Kohen Gadol, Kedusha that is motivated by Ki Kodesh Ani, Kedusha that's similar to mine, that immediately raises a very important question. How can you ever get there? Now that we've read this, now that we've seen that this is the expectation, that Hashem wants us to attain the highest imaginable level of Kedusha. In fact, not the highest imaginable, higher than what we imagine. How? I'm just a normal person. You know what I mean? I have a difficult time even making my way through a single sicha. You want me to be at this level of Kedusha? What are you talking about? How on earth is this pragmatic? So therefore, he answers the question. And Mefarish HaKosov, Kedoshim HaKedei Kedusha Elikis Tiyu Gam L'Shein Avtocha. Notice how the Rebbe picks out every nuance of every word over here. Kedoshim, holy in the plural, means the highest possible level of holiness. Tiyu. Now, if you're familiar with grammar, you'll know that Tiyu could mean you should be, but it's a more likely expression of you will be. So that's a promise. Kedoshim, we have an expectation that is beyond. And to you, we have absolute confidence that you'll achieve that. To you, you're going to be this. It's going to happen to you. How's that possible? It's so far-fetched. It's so beyond my reach. I know myself. How often do we say this? How often do we tell ourselves, I know who I am, and I appreciate my limitations, and that's part of my self-honesty, that there's certain things I can do, there's certain things I can't do. Halavaya Beinani. What are you telling me, that I'm going to be at this incredible level of Kedusha? Not me. You mistook me from somebody else. So the pasuk continues, Ki Kodosh Ani. Because I, Hashem, I am Kodosh. So the answer is key, because if Hashem says I'm holy, how does that help me? Obviously Hashem is holy. You know how it helps me? Because I have a neshama. And the neshama that I have is it is literally part and parcel of Hashem. That means Kedusha, becoming holy, chasing the goal of ultimate holiness, is not like you and I think. You and I think that I'm here, I'm down here. Kedusha is up there, some lofty ideal. And I'm not sure how I will get from down here to up there. Comes along the Torah and says, no, you're misunderstanding this. Kedoshim to you, it's going to happen. It is absolutely within your power to do so. That's why Kedoshim to you, I can instruct you to do this thing. Hashem doesn't give us an instruction unless we're capable of fulfilling it. So to you, you're instructed. Why? Because you're not chasing something up there or out there. You're discovering something within you. The Kedusha lives in you. Your neshama, which is your true self, is a chelek elikam mimal mamash, is literally part of Hashem. Ki kadosh, because Hashem is holy, that's why you are holy. It's just a matter of unveiling it. It's just a matter of revealing it. Still, That's all very nice, and that's the kind of thing you expect to hear. You know, the first time you walk into a Chabad house, the shliach tells you this kind of thing. No, it's amazing, you have an neshama and a pintel yid and all these wonderful things, that your soul on the inside, it's really connected, you don't have to... Very nice. But tachlis, practically, what am I supposed to do to activate that? Because if it was all so easy, surely we would have all done it by now. So what do you do? Practically... I remember a while ago, many years ago actually, meeting an expat South African who was living in Australia, and he gave me a gift. It was a business book that he had written, and the title of the book was called What Do You Do on Monday Morning? And the premise of the book was, all the business theory in the world is wonderful, but what do you actually do when you go into the office on Monday morning? Same question. All of this is very nice in theory. I have a neshama. My neshama is a part of God. Therefore, kedoshim is not out of range. And I just have to dig within myself. Okay, so what do I do? How do I start? Omnom, kedusha nali zoy de pashas kedoshim dereshes hachona vehakdoma. In order to attain this incredible kind of kedusha, holiness, connection to Hashem, lofty ideal that kedoshim promises us, you've got to do groundwork. You've got to start somewhere. And that's what Parashas Achrei Mois is about, the guide to what you're supposed to do. And that's why the two parashas often go together. First stage is the Achrei self-work. Second stage is the Kedoshim growth and achievement. So, what does it say in Achrei? If you go back to Parashas Achrei Mois, it's got the detailed description of what you had to do in the Beis Hamikdash on Yom Kippur. And the goal of the Beis Hamikdash was kapara. Okay, so for now we'll just give it a simple translation. The goal was atonement. But then if you look just one step further, the Torah says, Lifnei Hashem Titaru. What is Lifnei Hashem? Direct translation, before God. You should atone before God. That sounds like some classic biblical quotation, right? Atone before God. It's not the language that we speak in modern terms. Now let's see what it means according to Chassidus. Hem megim b'tarosom lemadrega shelifnei lemaila mishem havaya. Lifnei Hashem, according to Chassidus, means that you reach higher, lifnei, before. Remember, we're talking about a reality over here, a spiritual reality that is not defined by time. You could say something is before something else in priority. You could say something is before something else in greatness. So lifnei Hashem means that you do things in such a way that you can reach higher than the name of Hashem, Yudke Vavke, even though the name of Hashem, Yudke Vavke, is so profound and so powerful, and beyond this, the creation of the world, etc. But you can reach Lifnei Hashem, you can get even beyond that. Zehu hanoisen lohem koyach vicholes ba'avoyde de kadoshim tiyu, sheyalu v'yagil lisachet betachlis ha'kadusha de kadosh oni. It's that preamble, it's that Achrei Mois work, what is represented by the Avoida of Yom Kippur, the work in the Beis Hamikdash and Yom Kippur, that's what gives us the impetus that we should be able to rise and be able to connect and to be able to feel this godliness within ourselves and get to a point of Kedoshim. Now that hasn't yet explained to us exactly what we're supposed to do. It's just given us a bit of a framework and a bit of a direction. You start in Achrei Mois, represented by the work in the Beis Hamikdash on Yom Kippur. From that, you attain a level that you couldn't have imagined. Lifnei Hashem, even beyond the name Yudke Vavke, which is a very lofty manifestation of godliness. And that prepares you for Kedoshim, that you should reach this incredible level of holiness that is similar to God. But Tachris, we still don't know what this means. We've discussed previously, the Rebbe says, that the name of a Torah portion is a very important clue as to what the Torah portion is all about. That means, therefore, that the clue to understanding what the pre-work, the legwork that you and I have to do before we can talk about Kedoshim, whatever that is alluded to in the phrase achrei mois, after the death. Okay, so if we understand the principle of achrei mois, after the death of Aaron's two sons, and whatever that's supposed to represent for us, that will help us to know what we should be doing in order to facilitate this incredible kedoshim holy experience. So let's go back to that story and let's try and understand what that story is all about. Obir adavar. Achrei mois pshutik hamashmoy misyach zechol hamadubah beparasha haynu la'azhores v'atzivuyim aboyim achrei mois nodav v'avir b'karvosim lifnei havaya. The very simplest interpretation of achrei mois is that because there was an incident that happened, and it was a terribly unfortunate incident, because of that, Hashem had to give Moshe and Aaron very specific instructions going forward, particularly for Aaron and his family, that they shouldn't repeat the same mistake. What happened? Nadav and Avihu, Aaron's two sons, they were very enthusiastic, they were very inspired, they wanted to have the opportunity to connect to Hashem. So in their over-enthusiastic overtures, they came close, they walked into the Mishkan, they brought the Ketores in an inappropriate fashion, and they died because their behavior was wrong. So Achrei Mois, after that, Hashem warns, okay, please don't do this kind of thing again, we don't want any trouble, and this is the appropriate way to approach the holy area. We know in Chassidus that the interpretation of what they did is not, God forbid, that they were rebels and they thought that they knew better and they were going to buck the system. But rather, Bekarvasim lifnei avaya means Shegiu lekiruv gadol meoid laavaya leahava uchuka atzuma lehakadosh baruch hu ad shegufam lo yoyochel lehachil gadol chefzo chukasa shanashama ubon lichleis hanefesh mamash. What happened with Aaron's two sons is they became too enthusiastic. They became what Shlomo HaMelech calls choilas ahava, sick with love. They became so enraptured, so passionate, so driven in their quest to have this meaningful, deep, powerful relationship with Hashem, that they landed up in an environment that the neshama was too overwhelmed and the body could no longer handle it. In other words, the simple textbook reading of the story is they were bad boys. They didn't listen to what they were told. They disrespected Moshe. And because of that, they went running off to invent their own version of how Judaism should operate. God was very upset at them because this was supposed to be a special time, the inauguration of the Mishkan. It was supposed to be a happy time and the first opportunity for human beings to connect with Hashem in a meaningful, consistent way, and they ruined it. So God got upset and he killed them on the spot in his wrath. That's how everybody understands it, obviously, in the most superficial way, as unfortunately we tend to read the stories of the Torah often in such a superficial way. But actually what happened over there was nothing of the sort. What happened to them is that there are two, basically there's two ways that a person could react and relate to Hashem. The one way is quest. I know that Hashem is powerful. I know that Hashem is beautiful. I know that to have the opportunity to bask in the light of godliness is the single most incredible pleasure that a person could ever imagine. So I want a piece of that. Nadav and Avihu. Let me stretch, reach, try, connect, try and experience the light. And when I do that, I could possibly go into a place, to a level, that's, I'm out of my depth. I don't know how to play in that league. So if you had to take, for example, it's coming up for Lag BaOmer. I remember when we were in Yeshiva in Kfar Chabad, so they would make a massive bonfire for Lag BaOmer. It was a big clearing right next to the yeshiva, and the entire kfar would all come together, and the children would come out of their houses holding little like Havdalah candles, and then they'd all come together to this big clearing, and everybody would dance around the fire, and eventually they would throw these candles into the fire, and that's actually what ignited the bonfire. And they must have put some, some petrol or whatever they put onto the fire. And when you saw this fire burn up, eventually it got to the point that, you know, not everybody could throw so well. So some people's candles had landed outside of the actual bonfire. When the fire gets to be so intense, it kind of sucks in those little flames that are on the perimeter. And that's what happened to Nadav and Avihu. Every soul is compared to a flame. Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. The soul of Hashem, the soul of the person is the flame of Hashem. When you get a little bit too close to the main fire, you get sucked in. So Nadav and Avihu, their story is a story of overwhelming passion and overwhelming love and an aspiration to really, really connect that was lacking direction and discipline. So what happens in the Torah? The Torah says, wow, look at Nadav and Avihu. What amazing people. They are burning with passion for God. Surely it doesn't get better than that. Surely you can't go higher than that. Burning with passion for God comes along the Torah and says, guess what? Achrei Mois. There is life after that. There is still more on the spiritual agenda than just burning up with this incredible love of God, running around, telling everybody how much you love Hashem, how motivated you are, how passionate you are. Guess what? Acharei, even after that, there's still more to do. There's still further to go. I know. Shegam ha-madrega de-karvosim lifnei havaya eino tachliso avoida. That basically tells us that to be consumed with love for Hashem is not the end of the goal. It's not the purpose. It's part of the goal. You should definitely be passionate about Hashem. But if you think you've made it now because you are burning with love of Hashem, no, 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 no. Acharei mois. Ela sheyesh lo ha'acharei lehisalas oid ba'avoyda gam la'acharei sheyigil l'tshuko ha'atzuma d'kloisa nefesh. Even if you might have achieved such an intense level of spirituality that you are ready to fly out of your body in order to be able to connect to Hashem, we say to you, you haven't yet made it. There's still more work to be done beyond that. V'haynu, she'en ha'gbola b'yisalas midag l'daga ba'avoyda savayo v'hagia ha'odam gam la'madrega na'lis me'oid yochub l'achin tzorich la'lis oid yoyser. So there's lesson one. Lesson one is you've never made it. Lesson one is no person should ever turn around and say, but what more is there for me to do? Like we'll learn much later in Sota, right? We're coming up later in the Gemara Sota where it talks about Ma'achoyve Ve'aseno. Well, the Rasha who says, what is my responsibility that I should do it? So the Gemara says, what could possibly be wrong with that? So the Gemara says, no, it's the person who says, Ma'achoyvasi Oid. What's left for me to do? I think I'm done. I think I'm as good as could possibly be. That's an incredibly dangerous position. That's a nod of an Avihu moment. It doesn't get higher than this. It doesn't get greater than this. Comes along the Torah, says, Achrei Mois. No matter what you may have achieved, no matter how high you might have climbed, it's still beyond that too. וזהו הכלל והקדום והאחרון בעבודת הקודש שבו ברמז בהשם אחרי שאין להסתפק בעבודת והעליות ובקדוש העדתו. So now putting the two parashas together, we said that Kedoshim has an incredible expectation of us. Kedoshim to you, you should have this level of holiness that is absolutely unthinkable. How do you get there? You know how you get there? By acharei mois. By consistently, wherever you might be in your life, recognizing that there's more to do. How does a person reach Kedusha? Not by pining, aspiring, spiritually flying. That's not how you get the Kedusha that we're talking about over here. How do you get it? By never being satisfied. By always telling yourself, maybe I think I've reached the pinnacle of my spirituality. I haven't. Acharei mois. Even when I've reached a stage of, so to speak, dying, in other words, submitting my neshama to Hashem at all costs, guess what? There's still more than I can do. So it's that humility of acknowledging that there's always work to be done. That's the gateway to Kedusha. Isn't that fascinating? Because for most of us, the minute we heard right at the beginning that there's an expectation of Kedusha, we probably thought, wow, there's so much that I have to aspire towards. Here he's saying, no, it's not about this aspiration, this theoretical aspiration towards something that you don't even know how to define. Actually, what it's all about is saying to yourself, where I am right now is just the platform to launch me to my next undertaking. That's the gateway to Kedusha, that kind of humility. Omnam ho'avoyda atzma v'akoyach al zeh, Sheyochal al esbali abutum mikberes ba bad gosha parashas kedoshim. So parashas achrei mois prepares me. It prepares me with a potential to be able to grow and grow and grow to this level of holiness. How does it prepare me? Because it gets it into my head that the most important thing I need to know is wherever I am, there's further to go. Never be satisfied with my spiritual development. Okay, that tells me what I need to do. But what empowers me once I do that to actually have the desired result? Because I mean, I can constantly challenge myself and say I'm going to try more, but who says that it will ever get to this incredible level of Kedusha, which perhaps is something that's not attainable by humans? That's why you need Kedoshim. Hatam asher Kedoshim to you ad Kedusha abutu mugbeles kanal hu ki Kedosh ani. The reason in this week's parasha, in the second parasha, Kedoshim, the reason that I have the capacity to actually translate my drive to do more into Kedusha is not my doing, it's Hashem's gift to me. And with this, we're going to do a classic move in Chassidus, where we take a quotation from the Medrash, and we look at this quotation through the eyes of Chassidus, and it's a totally different message. It says, Ki Kodesh Ani, the Medrash comments that means Kedusha Si Lemaila Mikedusha Shem. That Hashem is telling us, I am at a level of holiness that is beyond your level of holiness. So according to the Midrash, it's telling you, aspire. Recognize that I'm much higher than you and aspire towards that. Now let's see how Chassidus explains it. So Chassidus gives an explanation, part one of which we're reading now, and part two of which is still to come. And that's where you'll see the real beauty of the explanation according to Chassidus. So part one of it is, no matter how much you climb, even if you reach the point that you now can say, Kedusha Si, I've actually got Kedusha, Hashem will say to you, yes, you have. But don't forget that the goal you're chasing is God, and God is Ein Sof, without any limits. So yes, you, compared to who you were, you've done a great job. Amazing. Kedusha, look at that. You've become holy, where previously you were perhaps mundane and unholy and misguided. Now you've gotten somewhere. You've gotten Kedusha. That's great. If this was all about you perfecting your golf score, well, you're a lot better than you were. Your handicap is a lot better than it was previously. But if your goal is that you want to actually connect to Hashem, then you have to be honest enough to say, Hashem is Ein Sof. Ein Sof means whatever I have done, there is as much growth still to go. That's what he means, Kedusha Si, Lemaila Mikedusha Shem. Like I said, there's a part two of it, which we'll come to in a couple of moments. What's nice about the Sicha is that the Rebbe goes relatively quickly through the concept and quite directly to the lesson. So what's the lesson for us? Never be satisfied, no matter how much success you've had in your spiritual development. Never be satisfied. You should constantly be working to develop further and to rise further and to connect deeper. Even if you tell yourself, whoa, I've reached such a level that I'm mamash close to Hashem. Maybe it's true. Maybe you really have. Maybe you've done one of these dramatic kinds of teshuva, like Elazar ben Dardaya. Or maybe you're actually a tzaddik and you just haven't told any of us. And you really, really are at a level of connection to Hashem. Might be 100% true. This is an incredible interpretation of the words acharei. Acharei means you really did get there. You really did achieve. If you had not achieved, we wouldn't say acharei after that. We would say, listen here, got good news and bad news. And the good news and the bad news is you're still in the middle of the journey. That's not what it's saying over here. It's saying, acharei, you actually have achieved. For real. You've really done a spectacular job over here. Now for the good news. Acharei, after you've done this amazing job, the beautiful thing is that there's something further that you could do. Reminds me a little bit of how people often say, what's going to happen when Mashiach comes? We have nothing to do anymore, right? There'll be no further challenge. There'll be no Yetzer Hara. Yeah, it's true. There'll be no Yetzer Hara. There'll be none of the challenges that we are familiar with. Acharei, after we have perfected all of the work of the last 5,780 years, what do you think? That's it? Then it ends and we all go spend a holiday on some beach somewhere? No. Acharei, after that, you will discover that there's a whole new kind of avodah. Maybe an avodah that's not so difficult and challenging with so many disappointments and certainly without the extraneous interference that we have. But there'll still be another avodah, a real avodah, where you'll actually grow and you'll feel achievement and you'll feel satisfaction and you'll feel the development from one level to the next. Not only acharei, after you've done an amazing job, do you still get more to do? But not only will you have the ability to say, okay, you achieved level amazing, now there's a few more steps to take, you know, nice, balabatish, orderly steps where one follows the next and you have this gradual development beyond that. No. Sorry, I skipped something. As long as you progress in incremental progress, no matter where you go, you're always still somehow connected to where you came from. That's the nature of incremental growth. So even when you hit the number billion, it still relates to the number one, because that's where you started this particular counting that ends at a billion. So as long as a person moves in an incremental progress, no matter how high they are still part of the story of when they were low. Let's say you climbed a ladder. Let's say that the ladder you climbed was the highest ladder in the whole world. The fact is that ladders are rung by rung by rung by rung. So I could be on rung billion and somebody else is on rung one. We're actually on the same trajectory. I just happen to be higher, but it's still the same ladder. And the other example he gives is a chain. So even if you're at the last chain on the one end of the ladder, this link links to that link, links to that link. So it's still part of the same chain that was linked to the bottom of the ocean, for example. So what we want is not just acharei, after you've completed that level, we add a few more links to climb or a few more rungs. We want you now to jump onto a different ladder. Acharei means you've done a brilliant job, and guess what? You can actually now do an exponential job. This is classic Rebbe. The goal of acharei, when you get to the next level of kedoshim tihu, that does not mean, like people will say, listen, I've worked so hard, it's time for me to retire. I'll still keep busy because it's important to keep yourself busy. This is the attitude that says, retire, are you joking? I'm just starting. This is the attitude that says, you ain't seen nothing yet. This is the attitude that says, my success actually shows me that in the same way as perhaps 10 years ago or 10 minutes ago, I never believed that I could be at this level and now I am, there's a level still to come that right now I can't believe is possible and I'm going to now start looking for that. And that could include a material, a quantitative movement. I'm going to add quantity in an unprecedented fashion. And it contains a qualitative leap, which means the kind of things I'm going to do now are in a whole different league to what I had done previously. So now he says the word acharei means that's behind me. Compared to where I'm going now, yes, there was a time in my life where that was my achievement, but now it's behind me. So I suppose it's something we could all relate to, right? Let's say that there's a period in a person's life where the big achievement was you learned how to walk. And that really was a big achievement. It was a big deal. Everybody applauded and the whole family was talking about it. And it was probably in the days before it was shared on WhatsApp. So they actually had to wait till the next family meeting to share the wonderful news that you learned how to walk. And at that stage in life, that was an incredible achievement. Could you imagine today when you put on your CV, learned to walk at 18 months? That's it. Nobody's going to look at you. Because now you're in a different league. Now you are measured by a completely different set of standards. This is acharei. That's behind me. That was a period in my life that is completely irrelevant to what's happening in my life right now. Not only is it irrelevant, it actually becomes ballast. If I had to bring that into my life right now, it would weigh me down rather than allow me to progress. So that's acharei. Acharei means that I've achieved amazing things and now I set my sights on a whole new reality and a new set of aspirations that is so profound that whatever I achieved until now has to be put behind me in order to go. It's like when Rabbi Zeira came from Bavel and he wanted to learn Talmud Yerushalmi. So he fasted and fasted and fasted to forget Talmud Bavli in order to be able to learn Talmud Yerushalmi. Meaning to say, that was an amazing achievement, but it has absolutely no bearing on where I'm about to go now. We can now appreciate why we pretty much always, almost always, read these two parashas between Pesach and Shavuos, because this is the period of time where we reflect on Exodus from Egypt and what happens next. So it's exactly the theme. Getting out of Mitzrayim, that's a big deal. Breaking away from your personal Pharaoh and breaking the shackles of your personal Mitzrayim, huge. But it's not the end of a story. Yetzias Mitzrayim in Yonad Yetziv Aliyah Kamo Shenema Hamal Chomir Etz Mitzrayim Yimatzav Lematzav Acher Shein Kol Erech Beinehem. The concept of Exodus from Egypt is that you move to a new reality that is so profound that it has absolutely nothing in common or nothing to do with your previous reality. It's not like I used to be a slave in Egypt and now I live in a different locale and I have a different job. It's not a different job. You're a fundamentally different person. You had no personal control when you were a slave and now you have absolute free choice. It's a totally different reality. Of course, there was the distinction between being a slave and now being free. And spiritually, I lived in a place where the only kind of spiritual experience that I had was deep darkness, meaning to say zero, if not negative spiritual experience. And now I'm exposed to Or Gadol, an incredible, overwhelming spiritual experience. So the Exodus from Egypt is not just the story of a group of people who had been badly treated and eventually were liberated. It's a story of how the Jewish people went from one kind of a reality to an exponentially different kind of reality. And that's supposed to speak to us in our lives. This is something that's supposed to speak to us every single day. Every single day. It's a huge, huge expectation. But that is what Torah expects of us. That every single day I should be able to undertake a movement. I should be able to undertake growth that is so profound, that is so beyond, that is so radical, that where I land up today makes yesterday look like I was a slave in Egypt. That's what the Torah thinks we're capable of doing. Which means that is what we're capable of doing. As much as there's a voice in our head constantly replaying this, no. I'll be happy if tomorrow I do just a little bit better than I did today. That's not what Torah says. With all of this information, we can go back to our original question, which was that it sounds like the two interpretations of Kedoshim to you are actually contradictory, because the one is asking for the highest level of dedication and the other one is saying, oh, here's something simple that everybody can do. Well, which one is true? The first explanation was, Aleph, Kodosh moved the Batachris, Zitziv, Isalis, Biltim, Gubedis, Vad, the Kedush, Shossi, Shelemaila. The first interpretation was that the parasha expects us radical movement, radical change, radical growth, all the way to connect directly to Hashem's holiness. And we thought, not me. Beis, The second explanation was Dugmas Pula Smaim Rishon Maim Achronim Shemipnei Atum Vazum Vasakonas Melachas Domus. The second explanation was what you need to do practically to protect yourself against the impurities of this world. That's why you wash your hands. Or the toxins of this world, which is Maim Achronim, because they used to have that very powerful salt from Yam HaMelech, from the Dead Sea, that could blind you, God forbid, if you left it on your fingers. So another danger. The one explanation is aspiration, elevation, connection. The other explanation is stay out of trouble. Very different. Why do we have these two explanations? To emphasize for us that the two different explanations are completely linked. The highest level of aspiration is available to you and me and every Jew on the planet. People who still have to wash their hands because they're worried they might get hurt. We could be talking to the person who's completely another than Aviu personality. They've reached the highest possible levels and we have to tell them, listen, there's still more to do. And we're equally addressing the person who you've got to just give them the most simple things. Do these things to make sure you don't get hurt. So if we take the Alter Rebbe's instruction that we have to live with the times, which means to live with the parasha, then we must say that these parashas, and particularly the time of year when we read them, talk to us, directly to us. As somebody recently told me, he said, when you read and learn a sicha, don't think that the Rebbe is saying something. Think that the Rebbe is saying something to you. That's the word over here. It's a hira'ah. The Torah is not talking generally. The Torah is talking to you. It's an old story that to tell about a Fabrengen, where the Rebbe said in the middle of a Fabrengen that everybody thinks that I'm not talking to them, that I mean somebody else. So there's one guy sitting in the Fabrengen, he elbows his friend and he says, you see? The chap is that it's talking to us. On the one hand, the parasha is addressing the person who is at such a lofty level that they have to be reminded, you still have work to do. That might not be us. I don't know. Maybe it is us. I don't know. You'll decide for yourself. But to those people who are at the point where they could feel easily satisfied that they've done everything that they could, message to you, it's not over yet. You've got plenty to do. In fact, you've even got exponential work to do. What about us, who maybe don't feel anywhere close? We don't even know what they're talking about. Nadav and Avihu and people who connected and Kedoshim to you. We don't know what any of this is. The parish is talking to us as well. She'al yiplu beruchom shlo yuchul alitz b'kodesh kol kach v'yishar ma'adugos ma'tachtoyna. Don't get despondent. Don't feel stuck. Don't think that who you are now is who you will always be. The empowering message over here, and this is really the point. The empowering message, you, Kedoshim to you. It doesn't matter who you were till now. Your history does not define who you're going to be. We just have to look at the world, right? The history of who the world was before 2020 has absolutely no bearing on what the world is now. So who you were, history does not have to decide who you're going to be. So maybe you feel that you're at that level, that there's still toxins and you've got to protect yourself from the toxins and wash your hands and do all of those things. But don't talk to me about all these lofty spiritual things that don't relate to me. They relate exactly to you. You don't know how you could move in an incredible fashion. That's the message. Kedoshim to you. Every single one of us has the capacity to connect absolutely with Hashem. How? How? You're going to ask how? And that brings us to the second part of that Chassidish explanation of Kedushasi Lemayla Mekedushaschem. Vaad lahadarge dikshekedushasi lemayla hi mikedushaschem kepirusha yodua bozeh. Because one of the secrets of Chassidus goes like this. Kedushasi, how does Hashem's holiness happen? Mikedushaschem, from your holiness, not from your perfection. There is nowhere in Torah that says, thou shalt be perfect. There is nowhere in Torah that says we have a leaderboard and you've got to make sure that you're in the top 50. What does it say? Kedusha Shem. Your Kedusha. You're working on yourself to be distinct. You're working on yourself to stay away from the impure elements of this world. From that comes Hashem's Kedusha. Like the famous word of the Magid of Mezrich in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says that how do you keep yourself from sinning? Know what is above you. So most people think, yes, there's a big God looking down from heaven, wagging a finger at you and saying you're not behaving appropriately, and that's going to keep you away from sin. Chassidah says that's not the only explanation. There's a deeper explanation. Da, you should know. Mala mailo, whatever's going to go on in the higher realms, mimach, Hashem has empowered you that you actually generate realities in the higher realms. So kedusha si, my kedusha, Hashem says, lemaila, how is it manifested above mi kedusha shem, from your kedusha? It's an incredibly, incredibly empowering sicha, because yes, it puts a tremendous pressure on the so-called perfection, the perfect people in society. Huge pressure on them. You think you're done, you've got plenty to do. And simultaneously gives incredible encouragement to us to say, you think you're not even on the starting line. Don't worry. You can achieve the most incredible level of Kedusha starting literally right now. So I think it's beautiful. It's definitely something that we could apply and think about.